360's The Week That Was, the most listened to hour in Territory Radio. The Territory leaders break down this week's big issues.
Beautiful weather out there and beautiful weather for those borders opening. But joining me in the studio for The Week That Was, proudly brought to you by BTC Constructions, we have got the Attorney General and Member for Nightcliff, Natasha Files. Good morning.
Good morning, Katie.
We've got the Opposition Leader, Leah Finocchiaro. Good morning.
Good morning, everyone.
And we've got Terry Mills, the Territory Alliance Leader. Good morning.
Good morning, Katie.
And, well, the borders are opening today. We do know that earlier this week we heard travellers from the Greater Sydney area as well as the Blue Mountains will be forced to spend 2 weeks in mandatory quarantine at their own expense if they decide to come to the Northern Territory. From today, the same goes for those arriving from Victoria. We know that that obviously a lot of people are really happy that the borders are opening. A lot of people are feeling quite cautious as well and a bit concerned.
So, Katie, it is a big step forward. It's been nearly 4 months since the borders were closed off, and our lives have changed, and people have had, babies have been born, family members have been very ill. In fact, in some cases, family members have passed away and loved ones haven't been able to travel to attend funerals. So it's had a huge impact on Territorians. It's had a huge impact on our economy with our tourism numbers, but we have to do these measures to keep Territorians safe. So even though the borders are opening and people can enter the Northern Territory without quarantining from South Australia, Queensland, Western Australia, Victoria and the Sydney metropolitan area still remain a hotspot. So people entering from those areas, if they're already in the territory prior to last night, they must continue their self-quarantine. And if they enter from last night, then they have to go into the mandatory quarantine at a cost to them to keep Territorians safe.
And we know that early this morning, there was people waiting to get across those borders the Queensland border, also the South Australian border. We also know that today there is a number of people booked on flights to come into the Northern Territory. I believe the first flight may be coming from WA. There are also flights today from Adelaide and Brisbane, as I understand it. My understanding is that it's a fairly full plane from Adelaide and around 200 from Brisbane. So we are expecting quite an influx of people. I know with that, we're hoping that it means that it's a boost to the local economy. That's certainly what everybody's hoping for, but in turn, plenty of people worried that we could see somebody come into the territory and bring with them their COVID germs.
So, Katie, we are not aiming for eradication. We did manage to achieve eradication for a short period of time. The suppression strategy is to, when we see outbreaks of it, suppress it and put measures in place. We have announced this morning that we have increased that penalty for anyone who's breaching that self-quarantine or not following those Chief Health Officer directions to $5,000. So we are serious about this. This is a step to new measures in place. It's not, the borders aren't just open. It's not domestic travel like you had prior to coronavirus.
Just to go back to that, we had a lot of people get in contact with us here at Mix about the penalties, and you know, we'd seen last weekend alone, I caught up with Commander Matt Hollenby about this. There was one person who breached their quarantining measures three times. You just go, come on, how can you not learn your lesson? So by the sounds of it, Filesy, that fine has gone from about $1,100
to $5,000. It's unacceptable. It's simply ridiculous that people feel if you're meant to be in quarantine, you stay in that property. You have food delivered to you. There's lots of people. There's lots of delivery services. There is no reason to go out, and it is unacceptable.
Can I just ask, with that fine, how does that fine system work to make sure that people are actually paying up as well? Is it similar to if you get a speeding fine?
Correct. It's an infringement issued by police in the Northern Territory.
Tasha, I'd be interested to know, we got that sense that the community was, pretty annoyed that people would cop the fine and put all that good work to risk. So raising the fine is a good idea. If they breach and they are hit then with $5,000, do they go to mandatory quarantine?
So it is up to the police issuing that direction and that fine. This is a breach of the Chief Health Officer's quarantine requirements, and so that fine is issued. But if there is continual breach, there is the opportunity for them to go into mandatory quarantine if needed.
Yeah, I thought it would be appropriate to say $5,000 and go straight to mandatory quarantining.
they are difficult, case by case, and we need to remember we've had hundreds of people self-quarantining, and the majority are doing the absolute right thing. They're being so
pedantic.
We're
only talking about those who breach.
We're talking about these few clowns, a handful that are wrecking it and putting
spoiling
us at
it for
risk.
Everyone else.
And, you know, the behaviour's been disgraceful, not telling employers that they should be in quarantine.
Yep.
But those are the matters that are before police and courts, and there's processes, but we've increased that fine. And we've also increased it to businesses. So I think we saw one case where somebody was actually, you know, had been supported to go and work. And so businesses can also face a penalty.
So,
has that increased?
That's increased to $25,000.
Oh, so what if they bring a worker in?
Yep.
Look, the only area where I wonder whether those lines could be blurred a little bit and whether it could end up a bit of a frightening situation for some is I know that there's, and it may even be, you know, the department, the health department and the education department and different ones who are obviously having to bring employees in to the Northern Territory at the moment for different roles. I mean, I would hope that none of those people that are employed obviously by departments or the health sector would be breaching their quarantining in any way when they come in anyhow. But
absolutely not. And so in terms of people coming in to do work, there's no exemptions from those hotspots.
Yep.
There may be exemptions in the case of a freight driver, for example, that's bringing critical goods into the Northern Territory, and they can essentially be contactless while they're in the Territory, so sleep in their trucks, those types of things. But people, in terms of health services, yes, we rely on some specialists. They will do quarantine if they're coming into the Territory. We can't afford to put our community at risk.
Tasha, I got a question that was raised with me yesterday by Frank Ocker. He said, I called him Frank Ocker.
Frank, from Ocker,
and he said, what about, you know, you've got people that have come into the Territory before the borders are lifted. They might come from, you know, a range of states and they're in self-quarantine. Say they come from Victoria or New South Wales and they were here a week ago. Now that the borders have lifted, do they have to continue the 2 weeks?
I just said that, Terry.
Clearly,
we're listening.
I said that
to Wolfie. Absolutely. So, if you came in from a hotspot, so that's all of Victoria and Sydney Metropolitan, you have to continue your self quarantine.
Complete.
And if you arrive from last night, you have to go into mandatory quarantine.
Okay.
Complete 14 days.
Yeah, I just want to make sure it was the complete.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because
that's been only a hotspot.
Correct.
Okay. Yeah. And so,
if you arrive from Queensland last Monday, you can today be free to go about our community. If you arrive from Victoria or Sydney metropolitan area last Monday, you're still in quarantine.
Okay.
And for those that are then set free, let's say, having completed it, do they need to have the app for tracking? So
we encourage everybody. We've seen over 6.5 million Australians download the app, and we encourage everybody to have it to have it open. It's a tool to help the contact tracing. And what we need to do is we need to give our health professionals and those working to support them as many tools as they can
have. But they don't have to have a test or anything, do they? So they're able to, once that quarantining period finishes, or, you know, like say somebody has, I don't know, come from Queensland, for example, and they've been quarantining for a week, but then today they're free. There's no need for a test or anything?
No. So if they're doing the 14 days, the mandatory 14 days, they do get a test. But this is also a reminder to people, be in tune with your health. If you're not feeling right, stay at home, isolate yourself, get a test. They're relatively easy to get. You just make a phone call or an appointment.
Well,
you don't. The images of the queues in Sydney, we don't have that
here
in the Territory. We've got a number of locations here in the top end. Ring up, we pop you into a test. It's usually within 24 hours.
Yep.
You arrive at your allocated time.
I booked mine in. I had it within 45 minutes, I reckon.
Yeah,
I'd been in contact with them, said to them I needed to have a test because I needed to go and see a doctor. I needed to make sure that I didn't come back to work and spread any germs to you, mob. And they took me straight in. Like, they basically said, can you come in half an hour? Yep, no worries. In, done.
And we have had some feedback. People have been seeing those images from Sydney of those queues for tests and going, I don't want that. That's not what it is in the Territory. We're very organised and there's a number of locations.
I am keen to know, though, from all of you this morning, I mean, is there any nervousness or trepidation in terms of those borders opening today?
I'm anxious that we have a world with coronavirus. There's no vaccine. We know how devastating. Look at Victoria, 317 cases yesterday. It's in aged care homes, staff that work in aged care homes, hospitals have been infected. But we must step forward into the new normal.
Yeah, so I you know, pointed out a couple of days ago, it's a bit of mischief played with it, but recognising that the rate of testing in the Territory is the lowest of any jurisdiction. And I think now is the time to lift the rate of testing, because in Victoria, not so long ago, their rate of testing was quite low.
But Terry, you can't compare testing in a centre that is in an absolute crisis, seeing hundreds of cases. We did over 2,000 tests in the Northern Territory last week. We're listening to the clinical professionals. So you are mischief making by continually raising this point without listening to the clinical evidence. We don't have community transmission of coronavirus. Why waste clinical resources testing unnecessarily?
Well, Victoria had a low rate of testing, and now they have a very high rate of testing. And this is, we're talking
because
about,
now they've got community transmission.
Calm, please. It's having it at least the national average, particularly now that the borders are opened. And I think that would be something to deal with the anxiety that people feel now that we are more exposed than we have been before.
You need to listen to the clinicians, and you are completely disrespecting their view. There's a number of reasons. In terms of testing, those numbers are over 2,000 each week in the Territory. We've got the point of care testing rolled out right across the Northern Territory in remote locations. Yep. You need to make sure that you don't waste both clinical resources and also clinicians.
Anyway,
this is a marathon, not a sprint, and the clinicians have pushed back pretty hard on you, Terry, and you should listen to them.
Sure, but I'm just pointing out for Territorians to recognise.
You pointed out earlier in the week, and the clinicians
please.
Pushed back on you.
It's
Terry,
right.
why do you think that those tests should be increased?
Because we now have people coming from other places, and I think recognising the concern that Territorians feel, I think it's only reasonable that the rate of testing increase. It is actually per capita the lowest rate of testing in any jurisdiction.
And we're the only jurisdiction that hasn't had a death or community transmission to date.
We're just talking about a change, and we're talking about the concerns in the community. And I think it would be quite reasonable to at least raise it to the national average.
It's not based on clinical evidence. The clinicians were quite upset earlier this week when you came out with that unfounded statement. We are preserving our clinical resources and the clinicians that do it. We are testing anybody that needs to be tested, as we've just heard.
I think today is important, you know, reminder for everyone to keep up with the practices that we've been, you know, really very diligent in doing. But, you know, things may have relaxed off for some people a bit because, you know, we did have closed borders and we did have no community transmission and no cases. So, you know, we've been in a very good position for a very long time. So we just need to take ourselves back to a few months ago where we were, you know, being very vigilant about continuing to wash your hands, using hand sanitizer, trying not to, you know, touch as many surfaces as you can and doing all of those things, being mindful of your distance with others. And, you know, really just looking after yourself and your family.
Absolutely. We've all got to join together, I think, as a community and make sure that we are doing that. Make sure that you are physically distancing. And I know that a lot of our businesses, you know, this isn't just a health thing, but it's also about being able to keep those businesses open. And I think that that's incredibly important.
Yep.
You know, there is not one business out there that is, you know, that is doing the wrong thing. They are all trying their utmost to make sure that they can keep those doors open and that they're able to have patrons come in.
Yes.
They're able to do vertical drinking or sit down drinking.
They are so well prepared.
And, we'll have some new money coming into the Territory now, which is got to be a really good thing. So if we all be vigilant, we have to, understand the health advice. We know that those hotspots are locked off from the Northern Territory. We've got COVID-safe jurisdictions or people from them at the very least coming through. A lot of the people who are coming through, the Grey Nomads, for example, have essentially been self-isolating in regional parts of Australia for a long time as well. So I think particularly our roadhouses today are probably going to be celebrating some much-needed cash through the door.
360's The Week That Was for BTC Constructions.
It's 22 minutes after 9 o'clock. Now, you are listening to The Week That Was, and joining me in the studio, Natasha Files, Leah Finocchiaro and Terry Mills. Now, we've obviously spoken about the borders opening, and we have spoken on numerous occasions about the impact that COVID-19 has had on the economy. And I think that we're all very, very much understand that it's had a massive impact. Now, we know that JobKeeper, we're yet to have an announcement from the federal government about exactly when JobKeeper is set to end. We understand that it is going to be September, but for some industries, we're of the understanding that it could be extended. But we're yet to have an announcement on that. I know that it's got a lot of Territorians quite concerned. You know, not many people calling in about it, but honestly, I think it's probably because people are feeling pretty sensitive and pretty worried. They're just wondering exactly what's going to go on when that JobKeeper ends and if they're going to end up being laid off. Now, I note in the Northern Territory News today, there is an article that reads, more than 5,000 Territorians have vanished from the Northern Territory's workforce in an anomaly unlike other jurisdictions in Australia. That's what new Labor Force data has revealed. It comes as the federal government announced a new $2 billion stimulus package to train and upskill job seekers. Australia's seasonally adjusted unemployment rate rose to a two-decade high of 7.4% in June, despite the creation of 210,800 jobs. Meanwhile, though, the Northern Territory's unemployment rate improved from 7.4% to 7.4% in May to 5.7% in June. But behind the improvement is 5,300 people leaving the NT workforce entirely, meaning that they're not currently looking for work. And most of them, 3,800 specifically, were men. In another twist, the Northern Territory's biggest employer, the healthcare and social assistance sector, shed 10% of jobs between the start of the pandemic and the end of June. I think realistically, we all understand, like I said right at the start of this, we all understand that we're in very difficult and unprecedented times. But what I am quite worried about, or what I think a lot of people are quite worried about, is what's going to happen when that band-aid is lifted in September. And we all know that the federal government cannot continue to pay, I guess, to continue on down this path for an extremely long period of time. But there is no doubt that there are some industries at the moment, particularly the likes of tourism, and you'd have to argue even hospitality in some areas of the country, where it's going to just have a massive impact when that JobKeeper ends.
We've been so fortunate to have the strength of the federal government provide the hundreds of billions of dollars in support that it has. That has been critical to many people's business ongoing survival or people's ability to put food on the table for their family. And we can't underestimate how lucky we are as a nation to be in a position to do that. What happens going forward, of course, is going to be really important. And for many people, this must be an incredibly nervous time. Is that JobKeeper cliff coming in September? But I think that gives us cause to reflect as a jurisdiction that we can't continue to rely on the federal government, because they will have to make whatever decisions they make. And certainly I'm hopeful that there will be extensions, particularly around some of those hardest hit industries through no fault of their own are bearing the brunt of this COVID economic crisis. But here in the Territory, we've had the worst performing economy in the nation for a number of years in a row. And we continue to have our Territory government not taking any immediate action on our economy. Yes, they have put out some stimulus, but again, that's just more stimulus. They are yet to announce anything that makes any difference to the way that in which they've gone about mismanaging our economy for 4 years. And of course, we've seen the creation of a Reconstruction Commission, which is just, you know, devolving responsibility of the Cabinet to a highly qualified group of people. But of course, they're not reporting until November. Now, the government is the government today. I know we've put out a number of policies, which are stroke of the pen policies that could change the way in which we do business in the Territory now and create investment. And so it's disappointing when we see people leaving the Territory when they don't have a job, people concerned about their business and their future, and a government standing idly by, not focusing on what we can do now to strengthen our economy and help as many people stay in the Territory as possible.
Katie, we're not simply standing by idly. We've put $400 million out the door in stimulus projects, in support for businesses. We absolutely acknowledge the federal government and that JobKeeper. I was at a business recently and they were talking about how that has helped them, someone that has been hit hard through the hospitality sector of the COVID. But we need to remember that this health crisis has caused the economic crisis, but even jurisdictions where they've forgotten
that. We did definitely have a crisis in the Territory before, around the economy beforehand.
We had the CLP who mismanaged our economy. They sold our port. Territorians have got long memories. They sold off our public assets and we got nothing in return. The post-impacts construction construction phase was badly planned for under the CLP, and we've been rolling out position.
What has your government done for 4 years? I mean, it's fine, and I just can't believe we're a few weeks out from an election and you are still talking about the previous CLP government. I mean, that is because you cannot defend your own record. You have nothing to stand by. You have done nothing to grow our economy. People, we have had the lowest levels of business investment. We've had population decline. It's been a disaster, and COVID has just added to the pain that your government has caused Territorians
for 4 years.
I reckon
a really important point worth making is we actually need, you know, we need projects, whether it's, you know, whether it's industry or whether it's infrastructure. And I know that, I listened to the show last week when I wasn't here, and I heard Eva Lawler talking about job-creating projects like the car park that she'd said in Parliament House.
The seven jobs it created, she said.
And the thing is, for me, is I get that they are obviously projects that are keeping people employed short-term, but we don't have anything that is job-creating, you know, and that's the big thing, or industry which creates new jobs. And I know that everybody's talking about that now ahead of the election, and it's something that we have all been talking about for some time. But realistically, we do need to start, as we've heard over and over again, diversifying so that we do have several different industries where it's not just a situation where you're able to keep some of the people who are in the construction industry employed for longer. It's a situation where you've actually got jobs that are created that people move to the Northern Territory for.
Absolutely.
Sustainable
and
long-term
jobs. You know, the interesting commentary here is sort of really politically based and talking and blaming the last mob or blaming this mob and looking to the feds to sort of help us. Really, it is the private sector that is going to deliver what we need, and we need to understand what the private sector requires. And that's why we have announced a very strong focus and support for the resources sector, because that is a very diverse industry.
You're back on the fracking bandwagon this week, are you, Terry?
How can anyone trust what you're saying? I mean, you've come out for and against gas, and now all of a sudden you're backing the resources sector. For how long, Terry?
Yeah, well, that's very interesting commentary, and I think
it's a question. Answer it.
People are genuinely thinking.
A couple of weeks ago, you astounded everybody and said that you were banning fracking, and then you've said never say never from Robin Lamry, your deputy leader. You've made motions and talk you're backing away from it. What's your position on fracking?
Most of this commentary that you're adding here is really politically based.
It's not
commentary,
it's a question,
interest.
Terry. Do you support fracking?
Why don't you
fracking?
Just tune in and listen to what the broader community is saying?
They're saying.
They
community
don't trust you.
You're going to flip-flop on industry.
August the 22nd will determine whether they're actually going to back you or back the CLP.
They certainly don't trust you, though, Terry. Well, what's your position on fracking? Now you've got a chance. I'll be quiet and you can say your position on fracking once and for all.
My position is clear. We are focusing on the resources sector in terms of the need to diversify the territory economy. It is a diverse industry that has been neglected by governments focusing on the next big thing. The real thing is right under our noses. It's talking about horticulture and making sure we're able to have swift and efficient decision making. We have an opportunity here to
didn't
reset.
Didn't hear a yes or a no in there
reset.
About fracking, but anyway.
No, it's clear. I don't think we need to go there. It's just
yes or no.
Making. No. And the issue here is we need to diversify the territory economy, make the decisions that the territory community is expecting leadership from government. You know very well that the broader community has its apprehensions about hydraulic fracturing. It doesn't.
And you are politically capitalising on them and not telling them the truth. After the election, you will back away. You're doing it purely for political popularity, and Territorians don't trust you.
All right, if we want to go there. The key issue that Territorians expect is to be able to actually trust a government. And the Labor Party went to the last election with two messages, and they backflipped on it, and you broke your own supporter base. I think the primary objective...
We didn't. We said we'd have an independent scientific inquiry. We did that. There's 135 recommendations, and we're following through. What
you're
doing is you are saying that you've changed your mind, you're flip-flopping around, and Territorians don't trust you. We've got a strong environmental record, and we're proud of it.
I am now the head of a new party that has listened to the broader community, and their view is this is not going to deliver the future that we
believe. The Ace Allen report was there. It's been there for 2 years. Why have you only suddenly, a couple of months before an election, suddenly realised this?
You guys are very exposed on this area. We need to turn our attention to the things that are right close to hand, and we start to get the economy moving and listen But Terry, the private sector.
Can you understand how some in the community would see that as being quite a hypocritical statement when you've then got an industry that does want to do business in the Northern Territory and you've now, you have changed your stance on that industry?
Is it unforgivable to change your position now that you're head of the party?
It's a very bad message. It sends a very bad message to other industries. And invariably, from time to time, industries come into tough times.
They
and it
do.
Sends a message to them that when the going gets tough, Territory Alliance walk away. When you want to talk about the resources sector, that's why we've been very clear on scrapping this government's very complicated and expensive hybrid mining tax and putting in place an ad valorem model so that Territorians can have certainty that what's taken out of the ground is taxed. And that will send a very clear message to the world that the Territory is open for business. We've made a commitment around reducing approval timeframes across government by 50%. That is going to support the private sector to spend
we'll
more money
see about
quicker.
That, but what's needed
a,
is a change
of posture.
I have got
a question from
a
listener today, and it says, is Terry proposing to build a metropolis off the back of horticulture? Why, after 40 years, has Kununurra not done this, and they've got the population that they currently do?
The expenditure and the investment in horticulture across the nation has grown exponentially, except in the Northern Territory.
But
the
Terry, horticulture's not going to get us
there, is it? No, not one thing is. We talk about diversification. Not one thing is. Not one thing, like hydraulic fracturing, is going to be
the
deliverer.
Well, it won't be hydraulic fracturing under your government because you keep...
However, there are mining resources that are so diverse right across the Northern Territory that if we had the clear leadership from government put their effort on helping to clear those roadblocks and get that moving, we would make a big difference.
Look, I totally agree with your stance on mining. I think that we have... that there has been a situation in the mining sector. I've spoken to Drew Wagner from the Minerals Council of Australia about this on numerous occasions, where we have got a situation in the Northern Territory where the approvals process in some situations takes so long that it gets to the point where you would be wondering if you were, you know, the head of a mining organisation or whatever, whether it's a small one or a big one, whether you should do business in the Northern Territory. But, I mean, the thing is with, you know, with the resource sector or the mining sector, it is similar in the sense, you know, in the same way that fracking is.
No.
In the sense that, you know, there will be times when that ebbs and flows in
Correct.
Terms of the value of that resource. And I think
Absolutely.
That the thing is, I grew up in a mining town. I grew up in Mount Isa. I've seen myself the way that a town will ebb and flow as to whether the value of that resource
that point,
is
Katie.
Good.
Recognise that the resource that we have across the Territory is spread right across the Territory, right through the regions. It has from rare earth to garnet to gold to base metals. So some markets will be up and some will be down. We're not putting all our eggs in one basket. It is a range of products, a range of resources. Why is it that Western Australia is rated as the best jurisdiction to invest?
Because there's a Labor government.
Because they have an ad valorem mining tax the one the CLP is proposing.
Labor government.
It was bad here in the Territory and it's gotten worse because it's not seen as a favourable place to do business because of the processes that are in place and the lack of real assistance and leadership from government. Australia is doing it. Why aren't we? Do we have the same sort of resource base here? Absolutely. Same
but
as
you know,
South Australia?
Terry,
absolutely.
Mining has an environmental impact.
Of course,
mines
it can be managed,
often have
it?
Large footprints.
Can't it be managed?
I absolutely believe it can be. But following your logic on gas, and no one's saying gas is a silver bullet. We're saying it's an important part of our economy going forward. Governments shouldn't be deciding what industries can and cannot take place. The market decides those things.
Are you involved in a democratic process? Have you actually heard what the broader community is saying about this?
What happens if Territorians decide that's
rubbish, and you know the $100 million is wrong, and you should acknowledge that. This is a cost recovery model.
You are putting support on something that the broader community do not accept.
I want to go back to that $100 million because, Falsey, you'll be surprised to hear that you actually had an ally in you saying that that's not correct in Owen Pike earlier in the week, who called in and said, Terry, that you weren't being honest about that $100 million. What exactly is that $100 million? Like, what is that?
It's a demonstration of a commitment of a government.
No, but how's it break down?
It's
when you're saying it's $100 million.
It's a range of investments that to support the gas industry and particularly to facilitate the decision of government. But the principle that I'm speaking of, that we need to have a government that turns its attention to the things that are actually going to deliver the results that are necessary and, most importantly, respect the will of the broader community.
Territorians don't trust you. When you had your opportunity, you failed Territorians, you outsourced your responsibility, you handed water licences, a key part of developing the North, to your mate, and Territorians don't trust you.
Well, you may say that. We'll just see how it pans out August the 22nd. Are you in the right spot or not? We'll let people work that one out.
Well, look, obviously we're going to see plenty of policies rolled out in the coming weeks. There's no doubt about that. I think it's 37 days. I can't remember. I keep getting confused whether it was 39 a couple of days ago or 37. So I'll double check that. But we are seeing different policies rolled out. Obviously, Terry, you did come out earlier in the week and you and I had a good chat about the mining policy under Territory Alliance. Leah, you came out and announced the energy policy under the CLP. I want to talk about that energy policy for a moment. Because, whether you're pro-fracking, whether you're against fracking, you've got to be careful with that word that you don't stuff it up, to be honest. But there is no doubt that there is a push by everybody, I think, all around the nation and all around the world, that we do need to be looking to different types of energy and thinking about the climate and thinking about our environment. And I know that, we're seeing that all around the place, all around the world. Leah, you announced that you will match what the Labor Party have said that they're going to do and go 50% renewables by 2030. But the thing that nobody seems to be able to answer for me on the 50% renewables by 2030 is whether our infrastructure, our power infrastructure, is actually able to handle.
And that's why
getting to that point.
We made that commitment with the remainder of the policy, of course, Katie. So we want to direct the Utilities Commission to commence a cost-benefit analysis on how we create greater stability, affordability and reliability into our network. At the moment, we've got small, isolated grids. So we've got Alice Springs, Catherine, Darwin and Catherine and Tennant, and they're not connected amongst themselves. And so how can we connect the territory to provide that support so that our generators, our territory generation, can run as efficiently as possible and absorb all of that solar coming into its system, but also then create a game-changing opportunity for us? We can't just be looking short-term. We have to, of course, look short-term, but we've got to look longer-term as well. And if we have the best solar radiance in the nation, if our nation is committed to a hydrogen strategy going forward and it's about developing that into a commercial energy source, then the territory can position itself to make the most of that. And that's what we're saying. If we can become an energy powerhouse and find a way to export our clean energy to the nation or to the world, then we've got an opportunity not just to create new industry, but to create that stabilisation that we need here in the territory for Territorians.
So it'd be interesting to hear Terry's point of view on this, because when he was the Chief Minister, he scrapped the Office of Climate Change within the Department of Chief Minister. You weren't allowed to say the word. We acknowledge climate change is happening in our world, Katie. Renewables, when we came to government, was 2.6% in 2016. By the end of this year, it will be 16%. We absolutely acknowledge, in terms of the reliability of the grid, and that transition is a key factor.
It's a big factor, and it's something that could cost an awful lot of money.
Absolutely.
And I think that we need to be responsible about this. Everybody wants us to be going, towards solar. Everybody wants us to be going towards those renewables, but we've got to make sure that the system's up to speed. And I think that all of you need to be honest about how much that's going to cost in terms of putting in the investment that is required to make sure that our infrastructure is up to the standard that it needs to be at. Terry, what do you think from Territory Alliance perspective? What is the aim for you guys when it comes to those renewables? But also, do you think that you need to have a better look at how that infrastructure is looking at this point in time before you commit to it?
That's the absolute key to this. Leah is correct. She's described what is necessary. But I think Territorians were going to need a bit more detail on how that actually is implemented. The Utilities Commissioner is usually makes very modest comments, but was quite scathing of the lack of attention to the change of the regulatory framework to deliver the things that Labor said that they were going to deliver. I think Territorians are deeply troubled by governments that just say things to sort of say the magic word, so causes people then to like the government, then fails to attend to the the means to achieve that. The actual heavy lifting around regulatory framework changes to allow these resources generated by solar energy, for example, to actually enter into the grid. How much is it going to cost to put those batteries in place? There's some tremendous work already undertaken in this space down in Alice Springs. I think they are cutting edge, and they're starting to describe and map out how much this is actually going to cost. The fact is, the world money market is moving in the direction of renewables. I think it's going to be something that is achievable, but we have to be very clear about the nature of this commitment that we're going to embark on. I think we all of us will be agreed that this is a necessary step that we must take.
There's an opportunity for private sector investment as well, and I think that's why it's really important that the Utilities Commission do that detailed work. We haven't done that research here in the Territory to work out how we connect ourselves nationally and how we can connect ourselves intra-territory. And that's fundamental, and that's why it's our absolute commitment to do that. We've also said we would get our Territory Coordinator to sort out and work through all of the corridors of the future we're going to need to the other states, because they're going to need rail access. It's going to be whether it's transmission lines or whether it's pipelines. You know, we need to ensure we're doing that work, because if we want to be an investment attractive destination, we have to do the work to show people that coming to the Territory and spending your money here is a better option. Now, when it comes to cost, I mean, Copper String 2 in Queensland, I think, is a transmission line from Townsville to Mount Isa, and I could be wrong on that. And the private sector are looking at that for $1.8 billion. Now, that's a tremendous investment. And if the private sector are backing it, it means it stacks up. Okay. So we have an opportunity in the Territory to change the way we do business, but we've got to do that feasibility first and then make some big decisions for our future.
And Katie, as well as hitting that already on track with in terms of those percentages for up to 16% by the end of this year for renewable, we've established the Office for Sustainable Energy to attract projects such as SunCable. But all of this is at risk, and Territorians need to be reminded of that.
360's The Week That Was for BTC Constructions.
It is just 12 minutes away from 10 o'clock, and in the ad break just now during The Week That Was, we're trying to work out whether it's a pupil-free day at school on Monday or whether
it is for some schools. Will be school. Much to my disappointment.
Phone in if you're at Stewart Park and you know the answer to the pupil-free day.
Let us know. Well, look, there has been a lot to, what was that, Terry?
Bakewell's
on.
Yeah, by the look of it.
Oh, there you go. All right, so it sounds as though some kids are back to school on Monday, others have a pupil-free day. Let us know if you know the official answer. Now, let's talk about Kakadu, because we know the Morrison government is set to inject $233 million to upgrade campsites, walking tracks, lookouts and boat ramps at several regional tourism hotspots. That includes Kakadu and also Uluru. Now, yesterday we spoke with Marion Scrimgeour, the CEO of the NLC, because there had been some discussion about whether Kakadu should be managed by the Northern Territory government. And I believe the person who had sort of begun that discussion was the Chief Minister himself, saying that, you know, that they'd quite happily take over the management of Kakadu. But it seems as though that discussion really hasn't been held with the traditional owners. And I think that's obviously a very important part of this. But it's also very important that there is that investment in Kakadu to ensure that it is the jewel in the Northern Territory's crown, like we hear so very often.
Yeah. Well, it was stunning last week when we heard the minister, the federal minister, asked whether she'd allow the Territory government to sort of take control of the park, and her answer was no.
And then, it was pretty blunt, wasn't it?
Absolutely.
Decisive.
And I said, that's not actually just about Kakadu, by the way. That's actually the attitude of the federal government regarding the capacity to really take the Territory government seriously. But I think their position, the Territory government, sadly, their position has been further eroded today by the dispute from Marion, the head of the NLC, saying this suggestion that there have been meetings and conversations from the Chief Minister, Eva Lawler, actually haven't occurred as far as she believes, and she's going through her records to see whether that actually did happen.
Yeah.
So it doesn't look good for the Territory government if they are saying things that no one either supports them or backs them up.
Yeah, and look, we know that the Territory Labor government have not done well in building a strong relationship with the federal government, and that comes to the detriment of Territorians. Kakadu, this investment is absolutely welcome. Obviously, a couple of $100 million into Kakadu is money well spent, and we need to ensure ensure that we continue to put our best foot forward to secure whatever investment we can. It is an iconic tourism and cultural destination. And so we need to be ensuring that traditional owners are engaged and that we're working well. All of the stakeholders are working well together to be able to put the investment in there that's required. I'm sure the Chief Minister would love to take over Kakadu, but the reality is he could never afford to pay for it. And particularly when we're staring down the barrel of a $7 billion debt, I think if this territory government had Kakadu, it'd be to its absolute detriment.
Yeah,
I'm
still trying
benefit.
To get those vines to cover Kavanagh Street. I don't think.
You don't think that was money well spent, Terry? Shading the road?
So, Tash.
Don't get me started on that on the car park.
Did the Chief Minister actually meet with the Northern Land Council regarding Kakadu?
So, the Chief Minister I know meets with the Northern Land Council regularly.
About Kakadu?
I'm not going to comment on the specifics of those meetings, but what I think we can all agree is that Kakadu is an iconic jewel in our crown.
Of course,
it's an amazing natural landscape that people come from around the world. We need to make sure that
did
the traditional
Eva Lawler
owners
actually meet with the Northern Land Council, as she said.
Terry, as I've just said, I'm not Eva Lawler or Michael Gunner. I'm not going to comment on what was
part
said
of
in
your
meetings.
Government.
But
it's
what
not a
I
good
can
look
say,
if they said it and that didn't happen.
What I'm saying is that Kakadu, everyone is in agreement that it's an iconic, amazing world heritage listed.
I mean, the dry season's lovely too, but we're talking about whether we're going to have three.
Sometimes it's a bit humid.
Sometimes it's a bit ordinary. This one's
whether,
all right.
Whether the three serious players here are able to sit at a table and discuss this maturely. That's the issue here, and that's what Territorians are expecting of a government, to
well,
be honest about
this. Well, lucky you're not at that table, Terry, because you'd be flip-flopping and changing your mind every 2 seconds.
Oh,
but what we need
you,
to
Tash.
Do is we need to strengthen
so,
the
yeah,
relationships.
Yeah, read your notes
we need
here that
to
have been sent
sure.
to you from the fifth floor. Call me names all you like. But it's not going to go so well for you, Terry.
But you don't seem to like to take it very often. But what I'm saying, Katie, is we
names.
All agree that Kakadu is amazing.
It's, really
it's in our backyard, and we
are going to judge you on this.
I think it's clear that only a Country Liberal Party government can have the relationship we need with the federal government to secure that much needed investment.
The trouble is you can't get on with each other. You're attacking each other internally all the time.
No,
Come on, have a go.
I mean, you just accused Natasha of being cheap. Look in the mirror, Terry. You're absolutely
really?
Low rent.
What did you got?
Stepping in.
360's The Week That Was for BTC Constructions.
Well, it is just 5 minutes away from 10 o'clock. Before we wrap up this morning, I have got Terry Mills, Leah Finocchiaro and Natasha Files in the studio with me. Now, yesterday, there was an announcement made about the new youth detention centre. I'm not sure if anybody saw that. I was expecting a media event, but it was, maybe there was in Alice Springs, but not much up here. We know that construction of a new multi-purpose built youth detention facility in Darwin and refurbishments of the Alice Springs Youth Detention Centre are set to begin this month. Better late than never, I suppose.
Well, we're 4 years down the track. This was an election commitment leading up to the 2016 election that the Gunner Labor government would immediately shut down Don Dale and build a new facility. It comes at a pretty price, Katie. I think it's about $55 million.
$55.1 million.
Yeah.
And
not bad. Not bad at all. Of course, we had the Pinelands fiasco where they were going to build the centre out the back of the industrial precinct and near neighbouring suburbs. So now it's going out at Holtz. It comes with an extraordinarily large price tag, and the tender's only just gone out. So I don't know if there's a scorecard for meeting an election commitment from 2016. This one's probably a fail.
That's a really bit of history here. I think it was in 2008. It was the Henderson Labor government that made the biggest infrastructure investment going into an election. It was the prison, a massive prison that was actually went over budget and was beyond capacity as predicted in a short period of time. Mm-hmm. And now we've got this Labor government making a very big announcement around the investment in effectively a juvenile detention facility. And I honestly believe that we could have done this differently. I think there is time for an entirely new model. We can't keep doing it the same way.
You had your chance, Terry. You were Chief Minister for 6 months. That's your chance. You outsourced it to the Renewal Management Board. You put up power by 30%. Cut public servants' jobs. Territorians don't trust you.
You are a little bit
Falsies recorded her ad.
I think she's a little bit sensitive.
hard. I'm just pointing out the facts.
Yeah, all right. They're particular facts that you've particularly chosen to make a political point.
Well, we talk about what people want. They want a stable government, and Territorians won't get that.
Oh, well, there you go. I think you just cut
people
my
People want
ad.
Safe streets. You know, Territorians want safe streets.
We've seen
youth crime get really out of control under this government. Permissive policies, offender focus.
Don't worry, Leah. They've just spent a big amount of money on a new thing that's going to fix the problem. Talk about trust. People won't trust this. They've seen it before. That large prison that was built there didn't fix the problem. It's gotten worse. We've got people in court at the moment for trashing it. And now what's going to happen? Are we still going to have kids on the top of this new facility that costs $55 million trashing that too? Are you actually going to think differently and approach this differently?
We won't be cutting the funding to child protection agencies like you did that start the long-term change that we need to achieve in the Northern Territory.
My dear, was about 8 years ago in a totally different time. And I think
Territorians just need to be reminded of it.
Well, I tell you what. Very low rent agenda.
It is just a couple of minutes away from 10 o'clock. We are going to have to wrap up. It is always good to have you all in the studio with us. Natasha Files, the Attorney General, thank you.
Thanks, Katie. And so Nycliffe Primary School is definitely a pupil-free day on Monday. We still don't know about your kids, but I was a bit devastated last night.
I did get a few messages saying Hayley Berry and others are also pupil-free on Monday as well.
So parents, you need to check your local school. Have a great weekend.
Leah Fidocchiaro, Opposition Leader, thank you for your time this morning.
Thank you for having me, and I hope to see everyone at the Palmerston Markets tonight because they are wonderful. It's really worth going to have a visit
if you
haven't.
They are fantastic. I'm going to head out.
And are you?
Terry Mills. Of course you are.
Terry Mills, Territory Alliance Leader. Thank you so much for your time this morning.
Well, the Palmerston Markets, and down there in Maldon, we've got a Meet the Local Folk down near the Maldon shops. But I just have to ask, though, Tash, will you seriously consider lifting the rate of testing now that the borders are open?
I will keep listening to the Chief Health Officer, Hugh Heggie. I won't be listening to you. I'm not sure where your medical degree is. I'll listen to the clinical professionals. And we'll feed all schools. I've got a pupil-free day.